is gonna be cool.
The topics and opinions expressed on the Dudes and Beer podcast are intended for an audience of 18 and up and are solely those of the host and guests. They neither reflect the opinions or values of either the sponsors of Dudes and Beer or your mother. I mean, seriously. Have you ever heard these guys? They'll talk about anything.
Whoa, hey, you think they're gonna show it?
They'll probably just blur it out.
Whoa, check it out, Beavis.
Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 82 of Dudes and Beer. I am Chris Jordan, your host. It's a solo episode, flying solo tonight, with a phone guest. Our very good friend John Bowne is on the phone tonight, and it's solstice right now, so I'm coming at you from the home studio. Amy's out taking care of some stuff. I was like, let's do a solstice episode. Let's talk about, you know, Stonehenge, all that kind of stuff, Akashic Records, just crazy out there supernatural things that go up around the solstice and that are talked about with the solstice and things like that. So that's the stuff that we're going to get into tonight with John Bowne, investigative reporter and a musician extraordinaire as well. So speaking of that, whenever we get back from this message from our sponsor, we'll find out what's going on with everything with him and the solstice right after this.
Hey, are you a musician? Do you play guitar, bass, or synthesizers? Are you a studio engineer looking for that different sound? Well, fret no longer. Austin Hot Mods is there for you. From Boss to Ibanez, DOD to EHX and more, Austin Hot Mods provides over 50 different modifications and customizations to some of the most popular guitar pedals on the market, from vintage to modern. So if you're looking for that boutique custom sound on a Craigslist budget, look no further. Contact Austin Hot Mods today and mention that you heard it here on the Dudes and Beer podcast for 5% off your first guitar pedal modification. Visit them online at austinhotmods.com. Texas owned and operated and home of the Mod of the Month deal. That website again is austinhotmods.com.
And we are back. How you doing there, John Bowne? You still there, John?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
I'm here.
There he is. There he is. Hot dog. Okay. I thought I lost you. I was like, no.
Yeah.
No. We were having such a good conversation, and then we had to start a podcast episode, and now he's not there.
Well, I recorded that conversation, by the way, and you can find that at blahblahshow.com.
The whole conversation you're putting up there?
The entire thing.
Really?
Honest. That's why it's blahblahshow.com.
Wow. You should warn me more about that.
Oh. Well, you didn't talk about anything illegal.
No, I didn't talk about anything illegal. Absolutely not. And what is talking about something illegal anyway, you know? Like, what's that all about?
Yeah. What is talking about?
Yeah.
Can you legally talk?
I don't know.
I guess
you can.
Maybe. I guess so.
I guess, yeah. I mean, you could be held in contempt in a court of law if you're talking, and the judge is like, shh, and you're like, hey, I'm trying to hit on this chick over here. And she's like, all right.
That's true.
You know.
In the jury, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no good.
There's like three. There's three different ones, and you're trying to, trying to pick one out.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right. You know, I'm just trying to make my time.
Right.
That's civic duty. Civic duty. Duty.
Speaking of civic duty, before we get started on the whole Stonehenge, am I coming through pretty good there?
You're coming through crystal clear on my end, Bubba.
I just want to let everybody in our radio listening world, I just wanted everyone to know that today is the 21st of December. Merry Christmas. not quite sure if Jesus was actually born on the 25th. There's some things in the Bible that there's three things that go against that. So you can research that on your own. But I do want to say happy birthday to Jesus.
That's right.
I am an American and I am a Christian. And my church is actually in Moorhead, Kentucky. And I just want to say hello to those folks out there, too. I love everybody, and everybody loves me, regardless of the people that really don't.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, wanted
deep
to,
down inside, they love you, or at least they love what you're about.
Or at least they don't tell me to my face that they aren't.
Yeah, they do.
They do. They do. You're right. They do. Well, at least it's all out in the open.
Right.
I want to let you know that I'm drinking a new Belgium triple, Belgian style ale. Of course, the triple is a stronger cousin, maybe a big brother to the double, and a younger brother to the quadruple.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there is a single, but you have to go to Belgium to get a single from a monk. Because monks are the only ones that apparently drink singles.
Yeah, because it's
double,
it's like water.
They add all the sugar to it. It's actually beet. It's sugar from a beet.
Oh.
And that increases, doubles up that alcohol content. And then you get to the quadruple. Then you can't even speak.
Yeah, right? So. You're like drinking prune juice.
If I ever went on a beercation, I think I'd go to Belgium first.
I remember my brother used to love this shit years ago. And I mean, I was a stout drinker. Like, Guinness is my jam. Like, I love me some Guinness. I love a stout.
Oh, yeah.
I love a double Bock, you know, all that kind of stuff. I love a chocolate Bock, you know, chocolate stouts. But there was one called Dixie Blackened Voodoo. It was my brother's jam. He loved the hell out of some Dixie Black and Voodoo. And it was like, ooh, like that's too damn much, man. That was like drinking straight molasses almost.
Shit.
It was like, who put all the liquid smoke in the molasses? That's that's hardcore, man.
that is a Cajun beer, right? I mean, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Dixie. Yeah. No, Dixie Black and Voodoo, if I'm not mistaken, was straight out of New Orleans at the time. So, yeah.
Oh, was it?
It was. It was out of New Orleans.
Full of molasses.
Yeah, it was like, oh.
I mean, if you're going to do it, if you're going to go New Orleans, you got to.
It's, yeah.
You got to do it. You got to have that voodoo in it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of voodoo,
probably put alligator in there too.
Speaking of voodoo, let's talk about the hoodoo that you do so well, John. Esoteric things, and just talking about how earlier we were mentioning how it's solstice right now, and it's supposed to be actually the darkest night of 500 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Shortest day of the year.
Yeah, yep. Shortest day of the year, but the darkness tonight is supposed to be, like, extra dark.
There's a lot to be said about what's happening right now, you know? I mean, it's 8:24 p.m. Central Time.
Yes, it is.
And it's the 21st of December.
Yep.
The druids are all hanging out right now. I don't know. Let's see how cold it is.
Yeah.
Where is Stonehenge exactly? But they're there.
Stonehenge is in England.
Up to God knows what. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
They're there. And let's see, BBC's got some. So it's a prehistoric monument in Wiltshire, England, 2 miles west of Amesbury and 8 miles north of Salisbury. Now just offended a whole lot of English people.
Salisbury.
Trying to do an accent,
right?
But they like that, you know.
That was a really good
American accent. It's always fun.
You know. I can appreciate that for a Kentucky Brit. That was pretty good.
Oh yeah. Well, I've had to get myself out of some situations.
Yeah, know. Right. Not to speak on anything, but
yeah,
there's been some things.
Sometimes you gotta be somebody else for a few minutes.
Yeah.
60 degree. No, that's us. Sorry, I'm not the weather guy.
That's all right.
Yeah, right now Stonehenge, it's 4 hours ahead of us right now. So it's midnight. It's after midnight at Stonehenge right now.
Yeah.
And what do you think they're doing? Is there a live feed from Stonehenge?
I don't know.
I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, no joke.
CamVista.com
is what I'm seeing.
The current temperature is... No, I was going to say it can't be the exact same temperature. I'm a doggone computers.
Yeah.
I remember when these things were just DOS.
When you actually just told it exactly what you wanted it to do.
Exactly. If you didn't, then you were getting nothing. Yeah, you can be a total moron now and use a computer.
Oh, well, I mean, that's kind of the idea behind them.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's where the real money is.
Yeah.
Just allowing your inner moron to come out. You know, it's not, I'm nothing against it. You know, I embrace my inner moron.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I guess right now I'm trying to find some live updates and stuff at what's going on.
Yeah.
Let's see.
We're about to get the temperature here. Wiltshire, England. Sorry to all the listeners. I know we've veered off topic here. This is the worst computer. Crying out loud. Oh, give me a break. All right.
Yeah, there's tons of people out there.
Do you mind if I play? Can I play a little song? Or would that be a copyright violation?
Well, I mean, that depends. We got to keep things under 20, 30 seconds, you know, all that kind of stuff. What are you playing the song for? What's it about? What is it?
It's about Stonehenge.
Oh, yeah? Go for it. Yeah.
All right. Third.
Keep it moving. Go.
I did it to you. The bullet gun was true. Yet this strange rite of danger.
All right.
Okay, that's 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know.
All right. It's the basic idea. Yeah.
Funny as I was sitting here on the, right now, it's funny because Stonehenge, at Stonehenge, actually, if you go to Twitter, you can watch some live feed video that they've posted and stuff. And there's a whole bunch of people gathered there, you know, everything else. This is from a while back.
Little town of Wiltshire, England. Looks like.
I'm sure that there, at like sunrise, there will be, or that there was, a druidic ceremony. There typically is. There's photos of it and stuff. So, but yeah, it goes on every year at the solstice, the celebrations at Stonehenge and stuff like that. Most of it. Is kind of along the realm of, you know, just pomp and circumstance, but there is some actual, you know, like I said, druidic ceremony for them that they go through. At least what exists of druidic magic or whatever they want to call it. It's not necessarily true druidic magic. I mean, the druids themselves were killed off.
Are you sure?
Yeah, the druids themselves were killed off by the Romans.
There's
got
to be some head druid. So. There's got to be some guy that's like linked in with the globalists, you know? He's like, yeah, I got to go here and do the Stonehenge thing. Okay, yeah, of course. You got to open up that waypoint on the Earth's surface.
There's probably some other higher meaning
to Stonehenge that we all don't understand.
Most definitely.
I think those ancient monuments, I've spent a lot of time studying ancient monuments, but it's been a long time. But I did spend a good 10 years studying them all. And I came down to the conclusion that it was all done, the lifting of the heavy stones, the reason for the stones.
Yeah.
It's a cross between energy and I want to say music, but that's really not what I mean. I think they were able, and there's actually a lot of research on this, they were able to harness certain notes.
Sure.
And they were able to use the vibration of those notes to move those huge rocks in the perfect formation.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's possible. I mean, the people at Stonehenge could be, you know, the people that built that, the ancestors, like, you know, standing in some alternate reality and nobody can see.
Yeah.
Just kind of looking at them like, you haven't figured it out yet, have you? I mean,
yeah.
You know, could just be a bunch of stinky hippies with tattoos just jamming out at the Stonehenge, and that's all that happens nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, 10, 12,000 years ago, that isn't what happened at Stonehenge.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and, I'd
be interesting to get an expert on that, you know, find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm not one.
Well, no, nor am I. But, I mean, you've studied quite a bit on stuff. I know I've studied quite a bit on this stuff.
I haven't studied that much on Stonehenge.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that it does actually lie on what are known as ley lines. And numerous monuments around the world, numerous megalithic monuments, numerous sacred sites around the world line up with these points of junction of energy along the globe. And basically the blue stones are considered, you know, it's a point of meditation, a place to go to connect with other places and a sacred site to go to at this time of year. You know, it was specifically made to calculate the solstice and things like that is what they consider, you know. I'm actually working on here in the background that's going to be a surprise, but
archaeologists believe it was constructed in either 3000 to 2000 BC, which puts it right around the time of the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
What was the Great Pyramid built? Great Pyramid was built after that. Yeah. I think the Great Pyramid.
No, Great Pyramid was like 10,000 BC, something like that.
2560.
Yeah.
2560. Yeah. So Stonehenge is older than the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
And it's still there. Still there. It's a bunch of rocks that, you know, after all this time, after, you know, 5,000 years at least, somewhere around there, no one's knocked it all over. No one's knocked it down.
Yeah.
Or maybe they have. Maybe, you know.
Yeah.
They have park rangers that have to put them back up or something.
Yeah.
It'd be good to know. Stonehenge.
Well, and it, you know, it's interesting that you talk about frequencies and all that kind of stuff. You know, I've done quite a bit of work in that realm musically myself, and using these for meditation, that kind of stuff, putting it into the background of music to specifically get certain psychological effects, that kind of stuff. you're, of course, familiar with Rosslyn Chapel.
No, sir.
No? You're not familiar with Rosslyn Chapel? Yeah, they talk about it in the movie Da Vinci Code. You know, that's
Are you talking about sonic levitation?
Well, I'm talking about just the use of frequencies in general. There is actually, if you look it up, there is a piece of music called the Rosslyn Motet at Rosslyn Chapel. It's considered one of the it's got the master's pillar and stuff like that from Masonic tradition there and everything else. And it's considered to have a whole bunch of secret code inside of it. They have no idea where it came from. It randomly popped up with some parish that had no money, and suddenly, you know, the father that was there said that he had a secret and was like uber rich suddenly and built this chapel. Well, these people discovered...
That's in England, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's in England, yeah.
These people discovered that up in the corners underneath these cartouches underneath these angels that all had these patterns on it. And they all actually matched up resonantly with a note in the musical scale.
Right.
And they wrote a piece of music called the Rosslyn Motet.
Well, I got to hear that.
Here's part of it.
It increases in intensity, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's really wild. They actually used... Because if you heard the tone there at the beginning...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an oscillator.
Yeah.
Wow. And they had to use an oscillator to get it perfect, right?
Yeah.
Because the pitch, that first pitch, whatever angel that's associated with, shows that it goes from that low note all the way to that highest note.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it begins.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that might have been really important.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So I mean, basically, this chapel, what they're thinking, was built around a musical scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or built to represent as a physical representation of a musical scale.
Well, I mean, even looking at the Great Pyramid, you know, the mystery of the King's Chamber.
And
people, well, I'm sure David Icke or somebody of Icke's ilk would completely school me on the fact that it's a giant energy source, which I don't disagree with. All I'm
saying is some evidence there for the mixing of, you know, salts and stuff like that.
Well, I think it's possible that in order to actually turn on the energy source, you may actually need some kind of sonic
excitation
crank, if you will. Like, this is the first machine that man ever built, and we can't really figure it out because ancient man built it.
Yeah.
But think, with the giant hall in there and the apex going right up perfectly to Orion.
Yeah.
You know, the way that they are absolutely built for that. It could even be a portal. You know, of course, there's a lot of people way ahead of me on that one.
Well,
how do you make it work? How do you make the Great Pyramid work? How do you make Stonehenge work? You know, how do you make these ancient structures work? How do they work? Because they worked once, and now they're just like these these old machines that no one can figure out how to work.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because a lot of it to me is related to sound. I'm trying to remember there was something that was recorded in the King's Chamber where they did some recordings and found some very interesting resonant frequencies inside of there as well. Yeah. But even if you go to like Chichen Itza, that's made to amplify sound in a certain way. It's interesting.
Oh yeah. 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 Have you been there?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I've, yeah.
Yeah. I've been there too. And I got really interested in chicken pizza before I went there. I went there with my brother and we immediately tested out the ball court. And so you can go on one end of the ball court and you're about, what do you think? Not quite a football field away.
Yeah.
Maybe 80, something like that.
Yep.
And you can whisper to each other.
Yeah.
And you totally hear each other. And I didn't believe – we had to test that out, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, there's a reason why the ancient people had – they were completely in tune with audio because, you know, we have all of these tools today. We're surrounded by them.
Yeah.
But we have electricity and we have oil and we have, you know, and this is a very young age, you know, this industrial revolution that's happened and, you know, the use of oil to keep us going. And this has all happened relatively and boosted our population and all that. All this has been a stark change in humanity, whether we see it or not. And if you just think of the times you've been out in the woods camping or, you know, or even worse than that, you get caught in the woods somewhere and you realize you've got to get some food. You know, you've got to get some, you got to make fire, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you got to figure out where you're going, you know? I mean, you can't just walk around going, oh, I wish I had my iPhone. No, you're going to actually have to look up at the stars now. Because if you don't figure it out, you're as good as dead, right?
Well, so and, you know, it is.
But that's how people operated back then. They were in tune with, they were completely in this, the universe. The moon and the sun, that was their iPod.
Well,
you know, that was their computer.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Well, there was definitely something to the community unit and to stories, legend, tradition. You know, I have a problem with people who have an issue with oral traditions. Oral traditions that have, you know, really not changed. So far as people know, for thousands of years, you know,
there are people that have problems with that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, because it's not written down, and it's like, well, they didn't write, you know.
Not, yeah, yeah.
Imagine well, how many cultures are lost to us because, well, they just didn't write.
That's so arrogant.
Oh
that's
yeah,
arrogant for anybody to say that they have something because the earliest records that we have are all from that. And I mean, a lot of them have been recorded and written down, but there's a good percentage that haven't that are thankfully still here. But,
yeah.
You know, a lot of those cultures are gone. They've been wiped out, you know. I mean, there's still cultures in the Pacific, you know, in the South Pacific that still use that oral tradition to teach everything about what you need to know as being a part of this tribe and being a human being on Earth.
Yeah.
All explained, completely explained to you through eons by our ancestors. This is what you are. And I mean, that could be, we're on a giant turtle, you know.
Well, there was definitely a simpler concept at one point, and there was a beautiful simplicity that was uncomplicated. I was watching an episode of Little House on the Prairie the other day. I'm not gonna lie. I was in the living room.
You don't have to lie about that.
I was in the living room doing some web coding, and it was on in the background. I think like up next was a Law and Order marathon or something, and there was Little House on early in the morning, and it was the episode with the young Indian boy.
We're all hiding something.
The young Cherokee. The young Cherokee
apparently
boy.
You're hiding Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, yeah. I love the show. You know, hey, it's classic. You know.
It's a great show.
It is. It's a great show. But
why you got to be dissing on a Little House on the Prairie?
But there was the episode with the young Indian boy, you know, who was Cherokee and had been brought back by his grandfather, and he was just trying to fit into society and stuff, and just didn't understand. Like, hey, like, you know, he went out and got into a scuffle with this kid who couldn't train his horse, and you know, while the kid was down on the ground, like took his horse into the water and like broke his horse. And he was like, oh, this horse is mine now. Like, this is, you know, by Cherokee law, this is mine. Like, you couldn't tame this horse and I did. So it's mine now. Sorry. Yeah. Peace. And it really is a very simple understanding. But, you know, it wasn't.
Black Elk explained the way Native Americans' mind works. And I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know whether, I don't know if this actually makes Native Americans higher beings, evolutionary-wise, but I've always thought that it did, actually, that true Native Americans, and there's probably nobody on it that I respect more. You know, I'm not Native American at all, unfortunately. I don't have any Native American blood, but I've always, always deeply respected Native Americans. And
I have some, Black Elk, I have quite a few Native American friends.
I'm sure in Louisiana. Yeah.
Well, from college and from when I lived in Maine and stuff like that, I knew quite a few Penobscot Indians. And
yeah, I had like I had a buddy who was like he was like 400 pound Kiowa. And he was just the nicest guy ever to meet. And he told me what goes on, you know, at the powwows, what really goes on.
Well, and there's...
But
there's
no, let me make my point about Black Elk, though. Black Elk, please. He said that the difference between Wasichle, I believe I said that correctly, and a Native American, or Lakota in his case, I might have that wrong, it might be a Dakota, but anyway, I digress. Black Elk said Native Americans think slow and act fast. Wasichle thinks fast and acts slow. And that has always stuck with me because they came from an ancient culture. And here we are, the Wasichle, whether that's a white man or whatever, it's really just a modern man or a modern woman. And you think fast and you act slow because all these things are kind of, you know, the Industrial Revolution has made things more convenient for you.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a Native American has always had to think slow and act fast because if he didn't think things out and then act quickly on it, then he probably wasn't going to eat.
Yeah.
You know, or survive, or, you know, take care of his family or whatnot. He had to constantly be aware of what was going on around him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that right there, you know, that ties into Stonehenge. That ties into.
Well, I mean, I think it ties into the teaching of just about every ancient culture and just about every religious culture. That concept of being together, trying to be of one mind, trying to be united. But unfortunately, we as people tend to corrupt that. We as people tend to interrupt that pure process.
And of course, we're all gifted too with with, you know, some form of sixth sight. Each one of us has more of a prolific special ability than another.
I would definitely say that we are all gifted with intuition, and we need to learn to trust it, sure, and hone it. And that takes unfortunately, that takes a belief in it to begin with. That takes an understanding that it exists inside you to begin with. And I don't know that so many people are so enlightened to consider it that way nowadays, really. Which is sad, because intuition is a very personal thing. You know, yes, it is a connection to something greater than yourself and outside yourself, but it's also something very personal that you have to learn to be in tune to, and you have to learn to accept that is there. You know, and it is that little tug in the bottom of your belly. You know, it is that little pull in your diaphragm that's like, ooh, wow, you know, there's something going on here. And I've definitely had it quite a few times in my life, but it was something that I can't say was taught to me. I just realized it was there, you know. And unfortunately, I don't think society, the way that we are in our fast-paced world, like Black Elk was saying, I don't think that people take enough time to A, be in touch with their intuition and understand it to begin with, because they don't understand themselves.
Let me ask you a personal question. Have you had any experiences that are paranormal? Because I've had multiple experiences.
I've had quite a few paranormal experiences. I've talked about a few of them on the show before. I of course, experienced a very brief moment, in my life where I truly felt the presence of God.
I have too.
And, you know, it called me to the seminary. It called me to a lot of greater things. But yeah, you know, I've definitely had some interesting experiences.
Let me ask you,
but was that a
feeling of leaving all of your baggage behind about spreading, knowledge of, a deeper self to everyone around you?
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely the aftermath of things, but I mean, immediately, no, it was, I don't know. I can't even explain it to people. It was one of the most intense experiences of my life. I don't really talk about it all that much.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, I mean, what's your experience with them, with ghosts?
Oh, I've seen a ghost. I haven't, you know, like a, you know, I'd rather have seen an alien than a ghost, but I wasn't looking for the ghost. It found me.
Yeah.
I was in a house. I was sleeping my father and my stepmother's house in Summit, New Jersey. It was like a really old house, 200 and just ridiculously old.
Yeah,
you know, the basement was like something. You go down there and you could have filmed like some kind of horrible Nazi film in there or something. Yeah. I mean, it was something really just dreary old stone and
old,
just
old rock basement.
Yeah, like something bad happened down here. You know?
Rock hewn basement.
That was the kind. Yeah, and so the house had a good. Let's see, it had 1, 2, 3, 4, four bedrooms. And I had stayed in one bedroom for a while, then I moved to this other bedroom in the middle, and that bedroom was right in front of the stairs. And one night, went to sleep and had this dream that this is frightening too. That I was in my bed, I was in that room. Only difference was next to the bed was a crib with a baby standing up screaming, and it was on fire.
Oh,
and so I, you know, anybody would just think, okay, well, you had a really messed up dream. You know, of course, having experienced it, I was like, that seemed completely real. Like, you know, like I was in the room. You know, dreams, you go to places and stuff, but I was right there. Well, lo and behold, the neighbors that sold the house to my dad and my stepmother lived next door. And my stepmother, I told her about it. And she went and talked to the neighbors about it, just, you know, just not out of concern, brought it up. And they said, well, that's pretty strange because a baby died in a fire in that room.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So that's verification, man.
Yeah.
I, you know, through the power of dreaming, I did see a ghost.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do about it. But, you know, I didn't see it. There are people that, of course, have seen them in their waking reality, which is probably a whole different experience. But I wonder how many people have seen a ghost in a dream like that, you know? I think a lot of that was due to experiences that I'd had before that, which, you know, I was in a car accident when I was 15. I went out of my body in that car accident. Yeah. It was a really serious car accident. And I came to, and I was standing in front of the car, and the car was completely trashed. And I could see my friend who was driving the car, just in complete shock, sitting in the driver's seat. And I had this really weird feeling. And I started to walk around. I was looking at the engine. I was looking at the side of the car. And I came to the passenger side, and I was looking at myself. And I'd been out of my body. And that night, you know, we had to make it home. We actually went home. Johnny went home. And I can't remember if he called his parents that night or what, but I had a broken hand. He had a broken nose. I had a gigantic cut in my left leg. And I actually went to my friend's house, who I was staying the night with. I won't name any names, and went to sleep, and I woke up, and my mom was shaking me and just completely outraged, you know, that I didn't come. I mean, just completely worried about me.
Yeah,
just a bad kid, you know. But and then following that experience, I had numerous more experiences that weren't really of my own making, where I had a heat stroke once here in Texas. And left my body and went and saw the void, basically, which is where we all go. And I had this feeling that it was everything and nothing all at once. And I could have easily just, you know, floated into it.
Yeah.
But my intent was to go back to my body. Actually went back to my body down the hallway in the house I was in and stared at myself for 10 seconds and then got back in my body and woke up almost as if by now I was getting used to doing this.
Yeah.
You know, and it actually, that was about 20 years ago, and it freaked me out so much. I made it a point not to allow it to happen anymore, you know? And I'm not saying I'm special or anything like that, because it's not about being special. When these things happen to you, and they happen to a lot of people,
Yeah.
Millions and millions of people every day.
Well, and that's my point.
It's just something that happens.
Well,
it's,
and that's
it's my so
point.
Personal.
That's my point, John, is that you kind of have to be of open mind to understand what that is. Most people would just assume that to be a dream. Not everybody is of open mind enough to understand that perhaps you were pulling something from the world around you. Like we were talking before the show, the Akashic Records, you know, the fact that the fact that we're all connected throughout time, throughout, you know, everything else that.
Well, the Akashic Records are supposed to have been now. And also, just a little disclaimer, I do realize that the Akashic Records have been manipulated by Alice Bailey and H.P. Blavatsky. And I'm not a theosophist.
Yeah.
I'm not a Luciferian Gnostic. Just a disclaimer there.
Yeah.
We're just talking about the Akashic Records because they are interesting. And they're supposed to have been created in a whole nother reality, another non-physical plane of existence.
Yeah, yeah.
The astral plane. And that's where they're either here on Earth somewhere. Some people think that they might be right there in front of the Sphinx paws, that the Egyptian government has stopped further access to that area because a guy came in with a seismographic hammer, basically, and tested right in front of the paws, and there is a chamber. There is a chamber there. So according to Edgar Cayce, they supposedly exist there in front of the Sphinx, also in one of the Mayan temples, which there was one that was just recently discovered by a kid using Google Maps, and it's huge. Should talk to that kid. That was like a year ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But he completely discovered, and he had been looking for it. It wasn't, you know, like he's just some kid. He was actually looking for it, but he determined that that's where it was, and then archaeologists went there, and it was there.
Yeah.
But supposedly there are Akashic records somewhere in the Yucatan, and then there are, if memory serves me right, which it probably doesn't, the other Akashic records are somewhere in, you know, they'd be somewhere like Uzbekistan or something like that. You know, they're in that part of the world that's, you know, that's changed. In
well, I mean, the Akashic records really are more like a thought form. It's more the overarching knowledge of humanity throughout time.
It's a library that you can access if you're able to access the Atlanteans.
Yeah, if you're able to reach that. Yeah, if you're able to reach that plane of existence, new knowledge is open to you.
It's there.
Yeah. And they, you know, that kind of brings us back around to Stonehenge and all that kind of stuff. Like it's interesting how much symbology across the world, how much these ley lines were found by these ancient cultures, and how they were drawn to them to worship for some reason. And it's just it's interesting to me, and that is something that I think draws a lot from that concept where there was just something that, and I think it is because they had more time, to be tuned into these things. They were a hunter gatherer society and stuff like that, you know, because they still lived in that world. They had to be in tune to something else. As modern technology has come along, as easy as it's made life, it's also gotten rid of that need to be connected to something else. And it's left this void, I think, in a lot of people's lives. And they don't understand a concept deeper or beyond themselves. And it really leads to what's called cognitive dissonance. where you literally come across something that is so mind-shattering, like evidence is given to you of something so mind-shattering and against your paradigm of thinking that you utterly dismiss and refute it because it would destroy your way of thinking. And your brain just cannot compute it, even though it's right there in front of your face. That's cognitive dissonance.
Right.
And, you know, I think we're dealing a lot with that spiritually in this society and in this world. We no longer have people that are connected to each other via this unspoken bond, so to speak.
Well, it's interesting that we would pull up the Akashic Records, because really that's kind of the pinnacle of everything that we're talking about, that sixth sense that we have.
Yeah.
And something that people 5,000 years ago, their sixth sense was just as in tune as the rest of their five senses.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a big deal. It's just something as human beings are complicated beings.
Oh, yeah.
I know that just from my own experience on this planet and having experienced some of the things that I find it hard to believe I actually experienced, but ESP with my good two, we spoke to each other without opening our mouths once.
Yeah.
And, my brother has it too, but getting back to the Akashic Records is basically, if you have that sixth sense, you basically have a library card to the Akashic Records. And it's, you know, when people say, all right, I died and I saw my whole life pass before me, the Akashic Records is the life of this entire existence.
Yeah.
Past, from animals to humans to, you know, elements.
Yeah,
everything
exactly.
From beginning to end, all in, like, you know, there's those experiences where you're like, I felt like I was gone for 20 minutes and you're gone for, you know, you go to the dentist, you know, they knock you out and you feel like you're gone for a day and, you know, you're only gone for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Akashic Record. It's the entire history of life as we know it in this plane of existence, completely accessible. And so what happened was, a bunch of theosophists and Gnostics and Luciferians. And the thing about Luciferians and Gnostics and theosophists and esoteric people and whatnot is that people don't really understand is they most people don't come to the conclusion that there's really no difference between somebody that goes to church on Sunday and reads the Bible and a Gnostic or a Luciferian. Because they're studying the exact same thing you're studying.
Yeah.
They are studying the angels. They're studying those the existence of Lucifer on Earth. They're studying all that history exactly as somebody that goes to church on Sunday is. And so where the Akashic Records comes in is that in 1908, a guy named Levi H. Dowling published a book called The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ, which he, according to him, witnessed through the Akashic Records and wrote it all down. And, you know, it's an interesting read, but, you know, if you're able to access the Akashic Records, then time travel that wouldn't really mean much. You're just with your mind able to go to a certain time and experience it. And that's completely possible. You know, I think when you dream, you're able to access outside of time and space.
I actually spent the latter part of an episode not too long ago talking about that. And I am a big believer in the power of dreams and dream work and going to sleep with intention. To find an answer, to look for an answer to questions, stuff like that.
It all comes down to intention.
Yeah.
Intent is the meaning of life.
It is.
That is the meaning of life. That's the meaning of your life is intent. you know?
Yeah.
That's what it all comes down to. And it's when you really start to think about the power of intent, it's so basic and right there in front of you that, you know, it's what drives people to do what they do.
Yeah.
Their level of intent, their focus of intent, their awareness of intent. That's all there really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. And, you know, that goes right there with manifestation and everything else. And that's kind of the idea to loop it back to Solstice and Stonehenge and everything that's going on there. That's kind of the reason that the people are there, is that they're there to put this good intent into the world at this time, when supposedly this sacred circle that was built by these ancient people connected them to a greater portion of the world and a greater reality and something greater than themselves in the universe, some primeval moving force. And you know, that's their concept of putting something good out there, is going to do this. And you know,
I can't imagine what it must be like, because the supermoon, did you see the supermoon about a week and a half ago?
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it must look like right now from Stonehenge with the stars, you know, and its connection. At the very least, you know, that's what the ancients left us was, hey, look, this is where you connect.
Yeah.
And we're going to pass that. We know that one day we'll die, but this will always be here, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what these people are trying to carry on. That's what these people are actively trying to do is,
I hope nobody, as long as they do it without hurting anybody.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's no human sacrifice going on, or no animal sacrifice or anything. So,
not at Stonehenge.
No. I'm sure somewhere in the world right now, somebody is sacrificing an animal to a god. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure. I want to get into what I think might be going on.
And yeah.
But I just want to quote David St. Hubbins, who said, "I do not for one think that the problem was that the band was down. I think that the problem may have been that there was a Stonehenge monument on the stage that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf." All right. That tended to understate the hugeness of the object.
Yes. Yes. That's right. That's right. I just watched that movie a couple weeks ago, man. Absolutely classic. I love that thing.
He died in a bizarre gardening accident.
That's right. That's right.
Authorities said, best leave it unsolved.
Well, you know, and that's just it. I don't know that we will ever know what the Nazca lines were truly for. I don't know that we will ever know what the true audio effects of Chichen Itza and stuff like that were for, the resonant frequencies that are there. I don't know that we'll ever actually know what the Great Pyramid of Giza was actually for,
but I think the real research would be to actually live like those people lived, and then it might take a few generations, and of course, you know, you'd be regarded as a cult, especially if you went down to Yucatan and got, like, you know, 1,200 people together and started living like Mayans.
Well, I mean,
but after a few generations, a light bulb would go off, and they'd say, "Yeah, this is why this pyramid is the way it is."
Yeah, when you start throwing 17-year-olds into the cenote, people might take notice.
Well, the guy that decoded a lot of the Yucatan language, the Mayan language, was just a kid that was with his parents, who were both anthropologists, archaeologists. And he actually deciphered a majority of what they call Catoons. And yeah, and it went on to be an author in that regard, but, and I can't think of his name right now, but that's the thing, is if you're around something long enough, it's going to soak in, you know.
Well, and it's the power of intent as well, like we were saying. Look at anybody successful, it's the fact of they put their mind to it. They dedicated part of themselves to it. And that's what it takes to be successful. That's what it takes to, you know, be a good student in school. Right. Everything. And we've kind of lost this concept of dedication to something outside of ourselves, to better the world around us. And I think if we can get back to that concept, you know, that's a lot of what Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer, about what those episodes are about. Those whole volumes is kind of cracking into that and learning to kind of rewire yourself in the way that you're thinking about things, you know, because I truly believe in the power of intent. I truly believe that we make the choices in our lives. We decide what's going to happen. We set those boundaries. We are the self-fulfilling prophecy. If we decide that we are failures, we're failures, you know.
Sure.
Despite what anybody says or what any scoreboard says, your brain decides whether or not you are. Your heart decides whether or not you are. And you really have to get those two things in sync to where they act as one. And that's where the point of enlightenment comes. That's where, you know, the point of understanding and empathy comes about that so many people lack in this day and age,
right.
I think.
And you really can't get there unless you embrace empathy and compassion for other people. You just won't make it.
That's it.
You know, and that's the thing with, you know, the reason I gave that disclaimer earlier about the Akashic Records and the people that have studied it is that they were after power, and you can't be after power.
Yeah.
You have to be respectful of everything around you and just realize that you're just a humble part of it, all of it, you know. You're not the important thing. There are things that are much more important than you, like the sun, for instance.
Yeah.
Is more important than any human being ever.
Yeah.
You know. So, and we're all connected to that. And the sun's connected to us, and the sun really has no opinion about itself.
Well, and we have to learn that we're connected with each other, and, you know, well, on that note, once again, John, thanks so much for being on. Take care, my friend. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you too, and yours, and your wonderful family.
Absolutely, man. Blessings. Take care, and we will talk at you soon, everybody. Remember, if you can't be good at it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our live audio streams, tune in at dudesandbeer.com or spreaker.com/dudesandbeer. You can find our episodes on soundcloud.com as well as the Google Play and iTunes market. You can also find us on YouTube, Stitcher, and your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the Revolution Digital Group family of podcasts. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.